content marketing, are you doing the same thing every day, every week, every month, every quarter, every year? It's time to take an unconventional approach to content marketing. And I can't think of anyone that is more qualified to give you that advice than the godfather of content marketing, Joe Polizzi himself, who is my guest on this next episode of the Your Digital Marketing Coach podcast.
Digital, social media, content influencer, marketing, blogging, podcasting, vlogging, TikToking, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, SEO, SEM, PPC, email marketing. Whew! There's a lot to cover. Whether you're a marketing professional, entrepreneur, or business owner, you need someone you can rely on for expert advice. Good thing you've got Neil on your side. Because Neil Schaefer is your digital marketing coach. Helping you grow your business with digital-first marketing, one episode at a time. This is Your Digital Marketing Coach, and this is Neil Schaefer.
Hey, everybody. This is Neil Schaefer, your digital marketing coach, and welcome to episode number 311. That was a great band for those that remember. Episode number 311 of the Your Digital Marketing Coach podcast. How the heck are you doing today? It is a rainy day in Southern California. And, well, there's talking about music. One of my favorite songs, I'm Only Happy When It Rains by Garbage, comes to mind. But I am just feeling fueled to not only present today's interview with Joe Polizzi with you, but also to give you a few updates from the Neil Schaefer home base. So what is going down with my business and with how I can help you? Well, two things. Number one, I am partnering with Tailwind to provide you all some education on how to start leveraging AI for your small business marketing. This is going to be a free masterclass. It is going to be on April 19th at 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 hour free masterclass. Go to neilschaefer.com/tailwindai, TAILWINDAI. It is going to be a fantastic event. I am actually going to record a separate podcast episode about this experience because the feedback I got when I announced this to my email newsletter subscribers, hint, hint, you should be subscribed if you want first dibs, was just overwhelming to the point where I had to redo the webinar plans. We had that much interest. So I hope you'll check out the landing page. If you're interested, you'll sign up. I'm a big fan of AI. We need to use the tools that we have. And I think that AI 10 years from now for content creation is going to be similar to how the internet is for research. Who would have thought back in the day when we used to go to libraries all the time? For those that remember, we used to look at microfilms. We looked at books. That's where we did our research. Well, internet came out. We had no idea what was happening. And today, it's just mainstream. It's not cool to say, oh, I did research on the internet today. Like some people try to be cool and say, oh, I asked this to ChatGPT. It is not cool. It is mainstream, right? So if you're not there yet, I want to make sure to handhold you and get you there. Make sure you check out that webinar, neilschaefer.com/tailwindai. Also, I've been investing bigger and bigger into YouTube and specifically doing live stream recordings for these podcast interviews and even my own solo podcast. So you can see me stare into a camera for half an hour and see what I look like. But regardless, I'm really excited about these. I will be publishing an episode next week that I'm actually going to live stream this week about how live streaming changes everything. It really just completely changed my entire focus, my energy, and I believe the strategic results that I will get from everything that I'm doing. So with that in mind, youtube.com/Neil Schaefer. Make sure you subscribe. Go to the live tab. You can actually see all of the live streams that I have coming up. These at one point will become part of this podcast, but you will be able to be notified in advance when that happens. I have some amazing live streams coming up. We have Jason McDonald. He's the author of a number of best-selling Amazon books, social media workbook, Google Ads workbook. You've probably seen them. I have Melanie Desiel, Content Fuel Framework book. I have Viper, the man about tech, who is the social media director and tech influencer himself over at VidIQ, where we're going to talk a lot about YouTube as well. So a lot of great stuff coming. Make sure you check out the webinar, neilschafer.com/tailwindai, and make sure that you are going over to youtube.com/neilschafer subscribing. And regardless, you should be by list. Make sure you go to neilschafer.com, subscribe to any of those widgets there just to be informed, because I am only starting. I really want to serve you in many ways that I can. A podcast is one way, audio. I serve you in text through blog. I serve you in video on YouTube more and more now. I provide you webinars. I write books. I do what I can to serve you in a variety of ways. And if I can be of help above and beyond that, yes, I have a group coaching community, Digital First Mastermind. I have marketing consulting services under my fractional CMO umbrella. But even if that is not necessary, I'm really happy, proud, and it's an honor to serve you. And without further ado, just to give you an idea of what we're going to talk about, Joe is a go big or go home guy, as you can imagine. Now, what's really interesting is that this is actually the third time I am having Joe Pulizzi on this podcast. I'm really honored that he is making the time for all of us. I had him back in episode number 176 in September 2020, where we were talking about corona marketing. That's right, this coronavirus that we all want to forget. Fast forward to February 24th, 2022, about a year and a month ago, episode number 251, we talked about what is the link between the creator economy and content marketing. Joe, for those of you that don't know, is the founder of Content Marketing World. He's also the founder of Creator Economy Expo. And the Creator Economy Expo is coming up in May in Cleveland, Ohio. I was there last year when it was in Phoenix. I have not confirmed yet whether I'm going to go or not. I am hoping to go, but regardless if I go or not, you should go. I mean, if you go and I end up going, I mean, if you go, let me know, right? Just DM me. Would love to meet up with you, have a beer together or what have you. But it is going to be a fantastic event. Already has some of the speakers, Jesse Cole, who is the owner of the Savannah Bananas. They are taking the baseball world by storm. If you haven't read up on him, he's written a best-selling book. Amazing guy. We have the CEO of Kajabi, Ahad Khan. We have Luria Petrucci, founder of Live Streaming Pros, a fellow All Nippon Airways brand ambassador, just an amazing person. We have Jay Baer, Roberto Blake, Andy Crestadina, Chris Ducker, Kate All. I mean, I could go on and on, but it is going to be an amazing event. And needless to say, I hope that you go, even if I can't go. Once again, if you end up going, let me know. Go to neilschafer.com/CEX to get the best price on the tickets. So we have Creator Economy Expo with Joe. We also have the fact that he just came out with his newest version of Epic Content Marketing, completely refreshed, revised for Web3, for AI, for all that. So it is the definitive primer for content marketing. And now Joe has the definitive event for the creator economy. But getting back to content marketing, which we're going to talk about today, right? Joe's going to talk about things like why sometimes buying an audience is better than building one, how to produce less content with more impact, how to create new revenue pockets from your existing content mix, and find a budget you never had before. It is an amazing interview, as it always is with Joe. So, well, without further ado, let's jump right into my interview with Joe Pulizzi about the 5 unconventional content marketing approaches.
You're listening to Your Digital Marketing Coach. This is Neil Schafer.
Hey, Joe Pulizzi, welcome to the Your Digital Marketing Coach podcast.
Neil, it's wonderful to be back again with you.
I want to say again and again, it seems like this might be the third time, but I know the last time we were in the midst of coronavirus. It was all about corona marketing. And, you know, normally I'd say, you know, please introduce yourself, but I think my guests and everyone else in the marketing world knows who Joe Pulizzi is. But as you republish or revise your previous books, now we have the relaunch of Epic Content Marketing. You've made this shift from content marketing, fictional author. Then we had corona marketing. I don't think it was a major shift. It was just sort of the right thing to do at the right time.
Yeah.
And then creator economy. And last time when we talked, you were big on this content entrepreneur keyword, which I still think is a great keyword. But I think creator economy has sort of leapfrogged that, and therefore the Creator Economy Expo. So maybe let's start with just explaining this dichotomy you have with Epic Content Marketing and then, you know, all things creator economy, the tilt Creator Economy Expo.
Sure. You know, I mean, it's funny with, I mean, as you know, I've been in content marketing for 20 years and I thought I was out of it, but they just keep pulling me back, It was time to do a new version of Epic Content Marketing. The book was 10 years old and Brian Piper, he basically said, Joe, when are you going to do a new version? I said, I'm not going to do a new version because I'm into this whole creator economy side. And then he convinced me to do so. And I started to get so many people just saying, hey, Joe, the book is Epic Content Marketing is great. The book is great, but you know, it's a little bit dated, and it was, and it sort of gave me a sick stomach, if you will, Neil, because I was like, I don't want people to buy this book that was really created in 2012, 2013. And it's a decade is like 100 years in marketing. So Brian and I put the whole thing together. The strategic framework for how to build an audience using a content marketing framework is still there. But we've got, you know, AI and machine learning and Web3 and creator economy and all the new tools. So we put that back into Epic Content Marketing and it just launched last week. My heart and soul right now, to your point, is in the creator economy. And if you look at content creators, what I call content entrepreneurs, content creators that are serious about building this content first business, it's the fastest growing business in the world right now. Nobody can even put a number to it. I've seen some that say 20 million, some say 50 million, some say 300 million. Nobody knows. It's a business you can start with your smartphone. And we've got some new research at The Tilt. The Tilt is my company that focuses on the creator economy. It's a newsletter. We're starting to get this stuff in that says, hey, 18 months and you can build a sustainable audience. And if you get to, you know, 3+ years, you can get 85,000 plus on average in revenue. And they're building like really amazing, diverse little media businesses. And I just love the fact that there's this whole new group of entrepreneurs that are out there doing their thing. So it's almost the same thing. We're still talking about content marketing, but one is for marketers at a large enterprise, very complex content strategies. And the other one is for an entrepreneur that's just trying to make a living, wants to be independent, do their own thing, and has an expertise in something. So now I'm sort of playing left field and right field, if you will.
And I guess with Epic Content Marketing, you're now bringing these two worlds together.
And they are together. And I think a lot of people didn't think about that. But especially, you know, we were talking a little bit before about just unconventional ways to look at content marketing. And one of them is there's a lot of companies out there that are saying it's very difficult to build an audience. And it is. And it can't just be a campaign and you have to commit to it for a long period of time. And they're saying, oh, look at all these creators out there. They're building audiences. They've already figured out the model in our particular industry, and they're going out and buying them. So you're seeing content marketers, actually one of the areas that they have to understand and be good at that they never thought of before were mergers and acquisitions. They're actually going out and acquiring. And Neil, probably over the last year, 15 months, I've gotten more emails and calls from people just saying, Joe, how do we do this? They're a marketer and they're actually saying, hey, we want to buy a blog. We want to buy a podcast. We want to buy a YouTube channel. These things were never discussed 5 years ago. Now they're all the rage because if you're a smart marketer and you want to build an audience and you know that there's one already out there, it might make better sense to move some money and say, look, we're going to spend 5 or 6 figures, sometimes 7 figures on a creator's business. And then they've cut all that process out for building a loyal, trusted audience and can get right to selling through that engine instead of, as you know, all it takes to put into a website and a newsletter or a blog or a podcast or whatever you're doing.
Yeah, it really taps into, you know, when I wrote The Age of Influence, we didn't have the term creator economy, but a lot of those trends, right, of that people just have a way of building audience and trust and relationships. And it's very, very hard for a corporation to do, right? So getting back to your point, I'm thinking of Brian Dean and Backlinko being bought out by Semrush. It's just a great example. And it makes a lot of sense that, you know, why try to reinvent the wheel when you can take it over immediately, just immediate ROI and that's immediately right. Scale into that trusted audience. And I think, you know, it's funny, the creator economy, we tend to think about like, you know, TikTok and YouTube, but it's really any space. Even we could say HubSpot's podcast network is sort of buying out, you know, in one way or another, these other podcasts so that they can be influenced by the HubSpot brand.
It's interesting. I mean, HubSpot is a great example of people that get that. They've got a whole division and that's what they do. They have a media network and part of that media network is going out and buying content businesses. And they did so with The Hustle recently. And you mentioned the podcast network and they're doing that. So this is just smart business. And what's amazing to me, Neil, is that when you talk to a lot of these marketers, they don't even think it's a thing. mean, I remember this is back. This will go back a decade. We were talking to one of the largest consumer product goods companies in the world. I remember Robert Rose and I, Robert Rose is my co-host on This Old Marketing. We were meeting with this organization in Singapore, and we went and talked about, they talked about all the goals and they wanted to build these audiences and they wanted to launch all these things. And we said, look at, we know the categories you want to go into. There's some really amazing creators building websites and blogs and newsletters and podcasts already. You have the cash. Why don't you just buy them? And the CMO looked like I had two heads. They're like, what? Like, is that a thing? Is that something you do? And so I knew we were very early when it came to that. And so now, decade later, we're finally at the point where marketers are, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're doing all the hard work. Let's bring them into the fold. And then, you know, HubSpot goes and spends a lot of money on the hustle. But if you look at the amount of money they spent, it's like, I don't know. Rumor is they spent $27 million or something on the hustle. That's like 3% of their annual marketing budget.
Wow.
So when you look at it that way, you're like, oh my God, 1.5 million subscribers, millions of people going to that website every day, every month, whatever it is. Oh, can we just shortcut that and buy that and then figure out how we keep that trust intact? And they figure out a way to do it.
You know, I think it's like, you know, we've seen the rise of user-generated content. We've seen the rise of influencer marketing just for the content that creators can create, right? You know, whether they amplify it or not is another story, but just leveraging that content can lead to incredible marketing ROI across all these different channels. Already loads of data about that. So I guess it's about taking it one step further and going bigger and saying, we don't want you for a piece of content. We don't want to, and I know that influencers, content creators are also sometimes getting hired. I think Disney recently announced they are hiring some content creators for their own marketing sure. team. But it's really about investing in these evergreen content channels that the content creator owns, which would primarily be blog and podcast. I'm curious if that model extends to a YouTube, perhaps, but to a social media where they are not in 100% control of their channel. Have you seen buyouts be for those mediums as well?
Actually, I saw one 2 weeks ago. Matthew Patrick, MatPat. Runs Game Theory and Food Theory Networks. These are multi-millions of subscribers on both of these channels. They've created some amazing brands with that, and they sold for a lot of money. It was not made public, but I know that it is a lot of money that they were able. And so it is a little bit of a different animal because you're right. If you do something on YouTube or something on TikTok or Instagram or whatever, that's, as we call, rented land. And we don't have control over the brand, let's say, as much as we do other places. But if you're smart about it, you've got those subscribers on YouTube. Somebody wants access to that channel. And what was really good about what Matthew Patrick and his team did, they put together, have really good, robust email lists associated with that. They've got amazing websites. They've got content that they're not just on YouTube. Now that's their home. That's where they built their fortune, if you will, but there's a lot of things going on there. And that's what we recommend. And we talk about that in Epic Content Marketing as well. It's like, it's no problem. You can build your house on rented land. You can build on social media. Maybe that's the place you should start. But you always have to have back in your mind, how do we move up the subscriber hierarchy? How do we move from an Instagram fan and move them into an addressable audience, an email audience, a membership of some kind, so that if Instagram kicks me off the platform, or they change their rules, or like Google Plus, as you remember, went out of business, lots of things can happen, you protect yourself. That's just smart business. And of course, I think we're getting to the point where everybody realizes that. But yeah, we're seeing more and more of those deals done. A lot more in email newsletters. Like, email newsletters is where everybody goes because the creator has most of the control. They have a lot of assets they can sell. Second would be podcasts. And now you're starting to see things with, yeah, can you buy a TikTok channel? Can you buy a YouTube channel? Yes, you absolutely can. You have to be, it's a little bit different, the working model. But I would, if I'm making my hit list, and I always have one with me as well, Neil, is like, who am I looking to purchase? Is it a blog? Is it a website? Is it an old domain? Is it a newsletter? Is it a webinar series? Is it an event? You know, all those things can be purchased, and there's just different dynamics associated with it.
What's really interesting with that is when I talk about influencer marketing, I say one of the end goals of most content creators is to have their own product. But now we almost have this .com, I can sell out, I can be bought out, which might be even better for some people. And that's something that's really come about with this creator economy and with the strategies that you've been talking about. That I don't think really, I mean, I guess it's been around for more than a decade. There's always been websites you can go to, like Flippa, to buy other websites.
Sure.
I know there's Telegram channels where you can buy various Instagram accounts. Don't know if they're full of bots or not, but that's a whole other story. But that's really interesting.
The difference is those were all financial deals, right? I mean, and I'm very familiar with Empire Builders or Flippa or whatever, and you put your website on and you might sell it for $10,000 or $1 million or whatever the case is. And those people buying that site generally want to say, okay, I'm going to buy this. I'm going to do certain things to get traffic to that site, and then I can flip that site or sell it for a higher multiple or whatever the case is. What you're seeing right now is the move from financial buyers to strategic buyers. You're seeing a company that would have, let's say, sponsored that website in the past or sponsored that newsletter in the past say, oh, well, they've done the hard work of building that audience. Let's just, instead of doing a six-figure sponsorship deal, we'll just spend five times that and buy the whole thing. And that's something that is completely new that I love to see. And that's the idea of, like, for an event. Let's say that you were selling an event, and which, you know, I sold, as you know, I had an event, Content Marketing World. We sold in 2016. Mm-hmm. At the time, the majority of people looking to buy that event were financial buyers looking to then put it in their portfolio. And these were mostly event companies. Well, today, if I'm launching an event, I'm looking at, oh, man, it's probably my sponsors are the ones that have the money that they're already sponsored. They already have a product to sell, and they're looking for a really good audience to sell that product to. And boom, we're a thought leader, we're a trusted expert, and we can drive revenue this way, that way, or the other way.
Yeah, it's almost like an extension of, you know, I was at Vid Summit, StreamYard was a big sponsor there, and most of the big YouTubers were using StreamYard. I'm using StreamYard as well. So for them to go to Creator Economy Expo and not just sponsor, but say, we want this all, right? We want it. Yeah. This is our ticket. It makes a lot of sense. And it really, Joe, you know, when I talk to a lot of my fractional CMO customers, they tend to be startup small businesses. Yeah, a lot of, I think they represent a lot of businesses and marketers that don't see content as an asset, right? And I think this really speaks into the asset that content becomes. I just think of Epic Content Marketing. Yes, you added a bunch of new knowledge, but you had a base to start with. So it was, you know, republishing, just like republishing old blog posts, revising them, refreshing them, and revising them with a new date stamp, and, you know, getting those old backlinks and immediately moving up the search engine rankings. It's this concept of asset. What do you think? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. And, you know, you were the one who taught me at Adobe Summit way back, and I still use this quote today, that 90% of company created content is focused on the company, not the audience, right? And that's what we need to change. But this thought of content as asset, where do you think we are, and what do you think prevents marketers and businesses as seeing it that way?
Most enterprises have been built on the advertising interruption model. And as much as we want to say we're in the social media era and we're thinking about our customers' pain points and we want to build an audience, they're not set up to do that. And I don't know how long it's going to take, Neil, but it's still a very long process to get that done. So what happens is, and then you have turnover in a company, and you see this all the time. So let's say that you look at any enterprise and the average stay for a chief marketing officer is, as we know, about 2 years, 24 months. Well, you have a whole strategic plan, you're moving forward, and then maybe in 18 and 24 months, you got a whole new one. And we see that in a marketing campaign. And that's what most content becomes in a mid-sized, larger enterprise, is it's a campaign. And you cannot build an asset in a campaign. What you're trying to do is interrupt as much as you can over a short period of time. You want to extract the value while you can, and then you go on to the next thing. And if you say, and you've heard it a million times, right? Somebody will say, oh, I'm working on this content marketing campaign. And I say, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Content marketing campaign is not a thing.
I was about to record a new podcast episode, and because I'm going to be on a webinar with other CMOs put on by an SEO tool, and it's going to be in a few weeks. And they show me the questions. One of the questions is, you know, what is one of your favorite, you know, marketing campaigns that you did recently? And I'm going to say, I don't believe in campaigns. You're exactly right. You have launches, and then you basically have data-driven experiments.
That's right. And what works, and you keep going, and that's the right. I mean, if you do a content marketing program, if you have a long-term strategy, you're always changing things. You have a hypothesis; it may or may not work. You're getting data. You're saying, okay, we're going to change this, alter this, whatever. But you never stop. A campaign, like as a political campaign, thankfully, always stops. Right? We're done with that. We want that political campaign to go away. I don't care what side you're on, but with a marketing campaign, you're saying, okay, we're going to try a short blitz of something. We really only care about product sales at this point. We're not necessarily trying to build a long-term relationship with our customers. If you're saying, hey, I'm into content marketing, you're automatically audience first. We're going to build this trusted relationship with an audience. We're going to send them ongoing information so that when they are ready and we have something to sell, they will buy from us. And if you do that really well, you can pretty much sell whatever you want. But it does take a long time. It takes 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, 18 months, sometimes 3 years, especially in B2B. You have a very long buyer cycle. That's where content marketing's home actually came from. It was loyalty magazines. It was a Walmart magazine. It was a Lego magazine. It was a Red Bull magazine. Those all started as loyalty-driven efforts to say, hey, we would like you to just keep buying from us forever. John Deere's The Furrow magazine was 1895 or whatever year that was. Still going on today in digital form. So that's where it comes from. And so if anybody listening to this wants to say, I want to get involved in content marketing, I probably would say your first instinct should look at a marketing goal of loyalty retention, or how do you generate more yield from a current customer? Because that's the easiest place to start.
And I'm just thinking back to the Sears catalog, which we don't have the data, but that was probably one of the most widely circulated. I mean, maybe second to the Bible. I don't know. Right. But
Sears had a whole slew of Sears radio network. I mean, so they were the largest media company in the world at one time that nobody even knew was a media company. So we almost have to change. If you look today at the marketing, content marketing model, if you will, it is the same for a marketing enterprise as it is for a media company. It's just different products are sold. If you're New York Times versus Cisco Systems, you're trying to do the same thing. You're just generating revenue in different ways. At Cisco, I'm trying to sell routers. At New York Times, I'm selling sponsorship and subscriptions. But you're trying to build first a loyal audience in order to do both.
So one of these, when we were discussing beforehand about these unconventional content marketing tactics, we've already dived into this. Well, instead of build, why not buy?
That's one.
But you also said this could be done on a tight budget. So I'm really curious as to how we can buy an audience in a tight budget. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if especially for an organization that doesn't necessarily have content marketing in its blood, doing a pilot program makes a lot of sense. Now, you know that you want this thing to go on, but if you sell it like an experiment, like you said, sometimes people just, hey, look, I need $10,000, I need $15,000, I need whatever it is, and we're going to launch this thing. You want it to go on and on, but it's relatively inexpensive to launch a podcast. It's relatively inexpensive to launch a newsletter. What does take the most time is figuring out the right strategy. But you can launch all these things and see how it goes. And that's what I would recommend is that somebody just asked me the question is, okay, Epic Content Marketing, Joe, how do I integrate this into my entire marketing organization? I say, don't. You're going to get fired. I mean, it's the first thing. It's like, that is too hard to do. You're going to integrate it with PR and comms and sales and traditional marketing. It's like, no, what you want to do is build this thing over here, show that it actually is working, build some kind of audience or set some kind of a goal. Hey, we're trying to see this behavior change in our current audience, or we're trying to show that people that read this email newsletter buy more than people that don't, whatever the goal might be. And then you go take it to the people with the budget and say, look what we're doing. And then you get more budget. So I would actually recommend that's the way to go instead of saying, oh, we're going to do. I mean, I was the one in 20 years ago selling multi-million-dollar content programs. I did it. And now looking back on it, I probably should have just said, hey, look, let's do this $20,000 experiment thing and see how it goes, knowing that I want to sell more, but let's make sure it works first. We'll use that in data, and then we'll move on to the next thing.
Yeah, I suppose it's like any other thing in marketing. Don't just go all in all at once. Get the data, begin with that pilot program. The great thing is, I suppose that any content creator that's looking to sell out would be more than happy to work on as usual, on a smaller program to help you get the data, and they can show the value that they have as well. So it makes sense for both sides, actually.
Absolutely does. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing we're seeing just from the bigger enterprises. Look at Arrow Electronics, big B2B company. They bought 52 different content brands. They kept all those people on staff. Like, they didn't just say, oh, we're buying the assets and everybody goes. No, most of those people come along with it. Maybe one of the two of the founders of those brands go away and they get the good payoff, but a lot of them end up staying. They just don't want to run a business anymore. They just think, I would just rather give it to somebody else. And I want to still create, but I don't want to handle all the other obligations associated with it.
Yeah. And I used to work in the semiconductor industry, and Arrow was actually one of our customers that distributed our semiconductors. And I can tell you that is an industry where there are not a lot of content creators, right? Our first website for our company, it was basically just PDFs of our products. I mean, it wasn't mm-hmm. like a true website. So that makes a lot of sense. I want to shift gears a little bit. One of these other unconventional content marketing tactics that we talked about beforehand was how to produce less content with more impact through targeting social sharing. I'm just curious. I've also talked about this. Our friends at SparkToro, they call it zero-click content. I call it authentically social content, really leaning into the platform, trying not to get people to leave the platform and offering value there. So at the end of the day, they will leave and seek you out. But I'm just curious, with that background, we see, you know, the growth of like LinkedIn carousel posts, of Twitter threads, obviously short form video, not link-based leading people off. I'm assuming this is sort of tied into that, but I'd be really curious as to what your advice there today is about producing less content, but getting more impact on social.
So there's two things there. First, let's just talk about I want to talk about the social part, but the first part is if you just look at the less is more thing. And I used to do this all the time. I would go in to a consulting engagement and I would do a cursory content audit. And generally on average, you've got enterprises that are distributing, creating content in 13 to 16 different channels. And basically it's mediocre at best. They're just throwing stuff at the wall, hoping something happens. And they expect me, it's like, oh, content marketing guy, you're coming in, make us a recommendation. What should we do? And I said, it's not what you should do. It's what you should stop doing. And I would say, you should cut half of these things and get rid of them, move those resources over where you can be exceptional at one or two things. So don't do, maybe you kill the research project, maybe the webinar thing's not working, maybe the event's not working, maybe the podcast's not working. I don't know, whatever's not working and you're just expending resources. And you could say, but maybe you can have the number one email newsletter in your industry and be indispensable to your audience. Great. So that's the one thing I would say. And there's a big movement toward that of about a lot, killing on a lot of things and focusing on being great at one thing. To your second point about social, and I've been in, and you probably already know this, I've been into LinkedIn as sort of my platform for the last 6 months. I've been all in every day. I post something and I've learned a couple things. And this is for everyone. You have to, first of all, you have to show up every day. So whatever your frequency and consistency is, you want to make sure you do that. When you do so, you are interesting. You're like Norm Peterson in Cheers, right? You show up every day at the same time. And when you do, you are interesting. So you want to do those two things. And then maybe the most important thing, and this is where you wrote the book on this, and I learned this from you, is you have to create your influencer hit list. Like, where is your audience hanging out? And on, in this particular case, on LinkedIn, and you want to make sure that you comment on their posts all that. And it does a couple things. One is your current audience will see that you commented on somebody else's. So you're basically reinforcing that fact. But the audience from that influencer is also seeing your posts. And hopefully it's something riveting or interesting. And you get people to like that. And then they come over and become your audience, basically stealing audience. This is a 6, 9, 12 month, 18 month initiative. If you do it well, you can have a rolling list of influencers as you do this. But if you want this to work and you want to build an audience, and like, and you know my numbers, I've got, I think, 250,000 followers on LinkedIn, and we've got, and I just launched a newsletter on that platform, and we get 30,000 really, really quickly by doing some of these things, but investing in the platform. Now, I've almost got off of Twitter entirely. I've said, I can't do Instagram. I can't do Facebook. I said, what can I do well? I said, we can do LinkedIn well. I can't do all these other things. So that's where I would just say to any size company or an individual, pick your spots. Where can you put your time in? And if you're like Justin Walsh or Jay Klaus, and you can do Twitter and LinkedIn both really, really well, then God bless you. Good for you. I know with my schedule and what I was willing to commit to, I could only do one really well, and I just chose LinkedIn. And that really works. So it's the combination of delivering amazing content, but activating that those influencers so that your audience sees you in multiple places, but that you're actually moving audience over to the thing that you're doing as well.
Yeah, Joe, I think it was that same presentation, Adobe Summit. That was the first time I saw you speak. That's why it had such a big impact. But you also said you don't need to be on these platforms. Just pick one and do it really well. So I think you're almost going back to that original advice, right? But doing Absolutely. Social well today is very different than it was 5 years ago. The LinkedIn culture has changed. It's really turned into this engaging network that when people figure it out, it can be really powerful.
There's conversations are happening. I mean, it really is amazing. Yeah. Like, that's why I love LinkedIn, because, and Twitter to an extent, I've seen it happening, but you're seeing real conversations happen. And we lost that for a while.
Yeah.
So God bless Microsoft and their algorithm over there at LinkedIn. Don't screw it up.
And you know, the less is more. I'm just thinking, so I went from my own website, and this is part of this presentation that I'm building, but I went from 1,600 blog posts to 400 because there was just too much. I didn't need it. It was out of date. I couldn't maintain it. I want the content that's really going to be evergreen. If it's not evergreen, it shouldn't be on. And through going up to, you know, creating 100 new strategic posts, or maybe 150, I have doubled the traffic compared to when I had more than, you know, 3x more posts. So it's definitely not about the quantity. And I did this on Twitter recently. You know, I'm not really big into Twitter threads, but I know they're a thing. So I did one Twitter thread and I noticed that I got, you know, the same number of impressions that I would have gotten over maybe 10 tweets. And the interesting thing is after the Twitter thread, the engagement you get from there, just like with LinkedIn, it, like, you know, it carried all the other boats. So after that, I was getting increased number of impressions for a little while for additional tweets. So it's this less is more. I couldn't agree more. I'm not pulling the plug on Pinterest yet, but every month, and with Twitter as well, with Elon Musk, every month I'm looking at my GA data, right? I'm looking at, you know, traffic, the quality of the traffic, conversions. And there may come a time where it's like, you know what? It's not worth it anymore. But that when something is not worth it, you know, one of my mentors in the corporate world before social media was like, a strategy is just about even more deciding what not to do than what to do, to your point. So it's like all the time you free up from doing that, you can shift elsewhere and make more of that, you know, that other platform.
And that's the thing. The wonderful thing is, and I know a lot of people that are killing it on Pinterest. So it's not the platform. It's Twitter can work for you. Facebook can work for you. I know a lot of people doing great with Facebook groups and video. God bless them. That's wonderful. Instagram, same thing. I have nothing against any of these platforms, but I have something is wrong with the fact that we felt we had to be everywhere. You don't. It's okay. It's okay to use all the platforms except one as just listening posts. Just figuring out what your customers are talking about. You have something there that's great. Maybe corporate announcements, whatever. Just use it for that. But you say, hey, the place that I'm going to be a thought leader, that we're going to build audience, is this, whatever it is. It's Pinterest. It's LinkedIn. It's TikTok. It's whatever. That's fine. Just be great at the one. And if you can't be great at the two or three, you know you've got a problem. So let's kill some. Let's change your strategy. Say no to those things so you can say a big yes to one of them.
Yeah, and I think it brings up this other notion of emotion. Like, be emotionally passionate about the content that you create, but you don't need to be emotional about the social networks, right? And once you create it, it's okay to revise it. You know, it's okay to use an AI tool to generate a better YouTube title than you could have. It's okay, right? You don't have to get emotional about, well, I don't want to use it. Well, if it gives you more and better ideas, why not? And if you're not going to use it, your competitors will. I don't want to go on the, you know, we can get
Off track. Hey, you know what? I've been through this. When I started in print publishing, I mean, we were moving to Photoshop and Illustrator and Quark Express and all these things. And there were a lot of designers and artists and people that put print publications together that said, that's not right. We shouldn't let technology stay. Well, we found out that, wow, we could be so much more efficient. We could focus on so many things that made our customers' lives better, get them better jobs or whatever in some way. So we use that technology. It's the same thing. AI is a tool. If it can help you create better stories and make an impact on your audience, then you do it. And if it doesn't, then don't. So that's where we're going to be at. Is there going to be a lot of AI content out there in many different forms? There already is.
Yeah,
there already is, and there has been for 5 years. I've been getting my fantasy sports updates in automated content for the last 5 years. Automated Insights has been sending that to me. This is not new. So anyways, don't freak out about it. Just use what you can. Experiment, absolutely. We're seeing that all AI tools, new ones come out every day. Please experiment. Use what you can and forget the rest.
Yeah, and I think that the Photoshop and all that is really interesting, because then you had Canva, which makes graphic design accessible to everybody in the same way that AI makes creating a catchy headline accessible to anyone. Obviously, you need to understand your audience. You need to understand what's going to make it work for them or not. So AI is not the solution, right? Just like Canva, you can create something on Canva and it could totally bomb because it looks like every other post from Canva that everyone else is publishing. So it's going to be interesting, but it is a tool and it does make it more accessible for sure.
Yeah.
For a hell of a lot more.
Could I send out? Yeah. So I've got my email newsletter audience of 30,000. Could I send that individually through my Gmail mean, theoretically, yes, nobody would do that. It's very tough. Those email marketing services, they provide a lot of things and whitelisting and send them all out and making sure I stay out of trouble and those. So I will use that technology. Again, just a tool to make us more efficient and make sense to use it. So yeah, I think people are getting all like, oh my God, human and technology, you know, whatever. This is a short-term thing where we're having this because this is sort of new. This feels new, even though it's been around for a long time.
Yeah. What do we do with our horses? I mean, we can go back in history, but anyway, I'll stop exactly. there. It's getting some. we do have a question from the audience. Brian, you stud, a co-author of Epic Content Marketing. Love that you're on this live stream. Thank you, my friend. Love to hear about your attention to monitoring the data, Neil. Thanks for that question. And I think you'd agree, Joe, that it really comes down to, you know, data-driven marketing. I take it to an extreme. I mean, I calculate over the last 12 months, for instance, I have various affiliate marketing partners and I calculate how much revenue they're pulling in, right? And I will adjust, you know, if I mention them in a post, where I mention them in a post, if I put them in a very prime position, if I share their content on my social media channels or email newsletter, it's revenue. It's data driven by the revenue. I go back into my blog posts and I recently retired about 15 different blog posts from the 600. So I went back down to 585, but they weren't delivering, right? So why? And they're not delivering traffic. And these were published 2 years ago. So I give them a year. It's like a baby. I'm going to give you a year to see how you grow. Sure. But at some point, is it just a topic that nobody's interested in anymore? Because if you look at keyword demand tools, I mean, it changes over time. Now TikTok's huge and I've leaned more into creating content about TikTok. But if it's something like a Google Plus content that there's no more demand for, it doesn't make sense to still have that content. And the data is going to lead you to that. If it's like, okay, there's still demand for this content, somehow the content just did not hit search intent, then it's time to republish it, right? So data, you know, every month I go through my social network data. I look at what content's performing well, what's not. I lean into what's performing more. And the whole Twitter, Pinterest, you know, every social network that you manage as a content creator or as a business requires investment, whether it's podcasts or videos or, you know, you're showing up on LinkedIn or Twitter, what have you. With Pinterest, it requires image creation, right? Specific new image creation every month. And fresh pins is really what feeds Pinterest. So it requires me to look at the data. It's like, is this investment worth it, right? And like I said, it's Google Analytics, right? It's looking at, you know, the traffic. Are the pins, are they old pins or are the new pins driving in traffic? I look at my Pinterest analytics and I will replicate the Pinterest design of those pins that are doing the best for my new pins for the month. And then I'm looking at, you know, the traffic, the quality. Time on site's huge. And I compare it amongst the networks, like, you know, LinkedIn versus Twitter versus Facebook versus Pinterest. And then obviously conversions. For me, the conversion is, you know, contact form or a lead magnet form.
Sure.
And it's really simple to do. It's just a matter. I think all this, Joe, is process. You got to have a process. I recently started using ClickUp. And, you know, productivity tools are not the answer, but it forces you to think about what is the process, right? And it forces you to say, okay, every month I'm going to do this, and this is the process, and I'm not going to forget to do it, and I'm not going to forget what the process was. So if you don't have processes for all these things in anything content marketing, Joe, I think you can agree, and you don't need to be an enterprise or have an enterprise tool to be able to do this. Even the smallest of content creator or you know, business can do this.
No, that was a great question. So Brian Piper asked that question, my co-author on Epic Content Marketing. So he's got a whole section on content optimization. But what comes to mind with this whole thing was I used to work with one of the largest B2B companies in the world, and they were updating their entire website. And they're like, oh my God, we've got thousands of pieces of content. How are we going to do this? And they actually created, Neil, a process for updating every piece of content. And I said, we had the team that said, look it, why don't we look at the content that's actually being viewed? Maybe there's thousands of pieces of content here that you should just get rid of because nobody cares and nobody's clicking on it. Nobody's doing anything with it. Well, we found out that about 50% of the content hadn't been viewed in a year. And we said, get rid of it. We don't need it anymore. So I think Brian, who asked the question, you would agree that you focus on the data that makes sense for your business and what your goals are. And then you go look at those things and you can get data on everything, but focus on, okay, what's my goal? What am I trying to achieve? Let's figure out what those pieces of data are. We can get those from analytics or we can get those from surveys or wherever we need to get that information and then make the proper decisions from there.
And just like when you do less is more, it raises the boats of everything else. It's now telling, you know, Google search engines that these things are not important anymore. Please focus on delivering search results that include these other posts that are important and that do have keyword demand and that still get traffic and that still have good user engagement, which is only going to help them, you know, in SEO going forward. So I mean, there are little things you can do, but they really help you on potentially an exponential scale that I think people forget about.
Absolutely.
All right. So I want to get into this other thing we were talking about. You wanted to talk about how to create new revenue pockets from your existing content mix and find a budget you never had before. Maybe these are two different things, but I want to hand you over the microphone. Really curious as to what you're going to say to this.
Well, I mean, Robert Rose and I have been talking about this for a long time, and Brian and I talk about it in Epic Content Marketing. I believe that in a lot of cases, the marketing department can be a revenue generator on its own. Like, I know we always talk about marketing and we're trying to drive attention and interest in the products and services that we're currently offering. And absolutely, we're trying to change behavior. But at the same time, when you're building assets, like we're talking about in this entire conversation, you can launch things like events. Like Salesforce has a big event called Dreamforce that at one time, you know, pre-COVID, that was worth $1 billion they could have sold that sucker for. I mean, you've got things happening like that. You've got HubSpot creating all these assets out there. You've got Arrow Electronics that are creating assets that they could actually drive revenue off of. If you look at that whole division that we talked about for Arrow Electronics, that division is profitable in and of itself. So if you thought about it, say, oh my God, could my marketing department actually generate revenue and profit? The answer is yes. We're just not doing it because we've never done it before. So you might make the decision and say, oh, we've got a newsletter here that we could have non-competitive partners actually promote their stuff and they want to pay us something to advertise or sponsor in that. The answer is yes, if you want to do that. Microsoft has events all the time that they bring in non-competitive partners in that spend a lot of money with them sponsoring their stuff. And it happens all the time with advertising as well. Say, oh, I'm doing an ad and I want Audi to put some money into this or whatever. It happens all the time in most businesses. We just don't realize it. So the point is that you can do everything a media company can if you decide to do it, but you've got to build an asset first, like we talked about. So what's the thing? Is it a podcast? Is it a newsletter? Is it the website? Is it an event? What's the thing that you're building? And could you bring non-competitive partners in there to support you and drive new revenue? Absolutely. And the only reason that you're not doing it is because you haven't thought about it before, or you think it's going to get killed in the organization. So back to the beginning of our conversation, start a pilot program, build the audience, and then look at all the revenue possibilities, including just, oh, I'm going to drive marketing interest. We're going to build an audience. Yes. And then how do we make money from that? Many, many different ways.
Yeah. Case in point, one of my fractional CMO clients is a startup in the B2B space, pretty niche space. And they know they want to serve the space. They're not sure of the exact product. And I'm creating a go-to-market strategy. We're launching April 1st, right? But the idea is you first build the audience. You deliver something of value to build the audience. And then it's like, well, how are we going to make money? Well, there's obviously events is a huge way. Most of their competitors, that's their sole source of income is events. And it's primarily sponsors, but it could also be in the target for, you know, any company. You know, every customer could also be a potential sponsor if you think about it, or other partners, right? And this is their space as well. So, you know, there's events, you know, sponsors, ticket fees. There's also obviously annual membership fees to the site should you have some walled content, or I think a marketing profs is a great example, right? Educational content, walled content. If you do things like webinars, you know, mini events, they're not these annual in-person events like Creator Economy Expo, but there's still things that, you know, if you build the audience, there are companies that want to get in front of that audience and therefore that can generate revenue. So these are real. And then, hey, you know, build a podcast, whatever, sure. YouTube channel. These things can augment that. So I think you're bang on. And I think, you know, that exercise for me working with this company that doesn't even know their business model yet, this is like what every creator goes through, right? We don't, you know, let's build the audience. Yeah, maybe we'll get some sponsor deals. Maybe we'll get some YouTube, you know, ad share revenue. But at the end of the day, there's so much possibility. Why don't companies have the same mindset? It's like in the age of influencer, why don't companies want to become influencers themselves? Because then more and more companies are going to want to work with you. More and more influencers will want to work with you. Case in point, what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I think it's more that they just don't think it's a thing.
Yeah, like, it's like a campaign approach.
You're in a marketing organization and you build the thing that has a loyal audience. You probably don't think, oh, I could sell sponsorships with this. I could sell memberships with this. I could sell books and eBooks with this thing. I could do events and webinars with this thing. And then as well as loyalty, as well as driving new products and services that we normally think of as content marketing goals, you can do all the other things as well. So that's the only thing I want to get out. Not that you should, but that you could. And as a competent marketer, you can make the decision what makes sense for your company.
And now I see the yin and the yang coming together. This is not the Creator Economy Expo. Yeah, it's for creators, but it's also what can businesses learn and leverage from the creator economy. And it's not just leveraging creators either.
That's what I was surprised. I was actually surprised. So most of our attendees are creators. They're trying to build their business. But what I was surprised is we have a lot of marketers at businesses that want to learn this stuff as well, but also want to understand what creators are doing and partner with creators and a lot of things. So that's why Brian and I decided to put it in Epic Content Marketing, because I'm like, oh my God, this goes together. And if you are a content marketer, you need to understand what individual content creators are doing as well.
Yeah. And just to give you, you know, we talked about AI giving accessibility. There is always room for new innovation. So I was at Jasper.ai's generative AI conference in San Francisco, literally a month ago. In fact, my voice is still raspy.
I heard they had like 1,000, they were expecting a couple hundred. They had like 1,000 people or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. It was an amazing event. Guy sitting next to me, event ends, we start talking. He is basically develops websites for small businesses. And it's always been hard for him to get information out of small businesses as to who's the target persona, what's the key messaging, all these things he needs to create the website. So he played around with ChatGPT to the point where he fine-tuned his prompts so that he could basically automate all that to create the website. And now he's like, you know, I'm not going to just do this for my business. I'm going to start a new business just using this technology where other agencies can use as well. It's that mindset, right? And I think the smaller the business, the more entrepreneurial you are, or you know, the more you're tied in the creator economy, you get that mindset. But every corporation should try to tap in that mindset as well. I think there's just so much potential, so much room for innovation, even in a space like AI, where they say, oh, they're coming for your job. Yeah, they're coming for white collar jobs, and it scares a lot of people, but there's also a heck of a lot of innovation that's going to come from it, and new jobs and new companies that are going to come from it as well.
Well, I hope that if you work at a larger company, I hope you are giving permission for the people in your organization to create their own audiences, because you actually would like to have employees that actually have audiences because they're more influential. And yes, they might leave someday, but that's okay. You're creating a better marketing organization because you have all these little pocket audiences, and the people that can sell your products and services the most are your employees.
Yeah.
So have them build your audience, give them the assets, give them do the Google rule where 10 or 20% of their time they can do their own thing, and just say, hey, we would love it if we'll give you the tools to create your own podcast or your newsletter. Yep. That would be lovely to do. IBM did that whatever years ago when they first got into socials. Yes, do all the social stuff. I'd like to see that again with just content creation.
Yeah. And I've seen a transition I've done a lot of employer advocacy trainings and workshops and speeches, you know, back from when it was the first big word, like in 2012 or 13, it was really focused on B2B sales and really using LinkedIn tactically. But more recently, when companies reach out to me, they just want to get their people on social. They want them to become content creators and fans, knowing that indirectly it will benefit, you know, the business, which is smart. So it's really interesting. How do we foster a network, an employee network of content creators? And if you can create those training systems for content creators, you can start to, you know, or for your employees that are content creators, you can now bring in your external influencers to be your trainers. You can create this one singular program that matches your employees with external influencers, brings them all together. Hey, why don't you bring in your customers that are nano influencers as well? And you can create this singular army, right? And now this becomes this asset. And whenever you want to do any training or education, whatever, you can hit all these different people. This is what I've been talking about. Really, it's evolved from publishing The Age of Influence, but I'm starting to see more and more businesses do this. And there's just, Joe, there's just so much potential out there. I guess if you want to tap into the potential, you need to do two things. Number one, you need to go to Creator Economy Expo. It's in May. I'm going to try to put, I think my affiliate link still works. I'm going to put that in the description and the show notes of the podcast. But the other is you got to buy Epic Content Marketing. Get up to speed on that core content marketing, get back to the basics, but obviously the basics have changed with AI Web3. So Joe, where else, this has been a fantastic conversation. Where else outside of, and hopefully I'll be at Creator Economy Expo as well, I was there last year, hopefully again this year, but where else can people go to, you know, I'm supposing they should just opt into the tilt, but you let me know, where should we send people?
If you're interested in this stuff, you want to get it twice a week. We have a newsletter called thetilt.com. You can get this information. We talk about what's going on in the creator economy and what's going to affect you. It's important for marketing in general. So I would do that, The Tilt. And then I'm at Joe Pulizzi, P-U-L-I-Z-Z-I, everywhere on social. Connect with me, connect on LinkedIn, wherever, Twitter. And we'll just, I'm just out here helping. My whole thing is being an evangelist for content creation for individuals as well as content marketers. And I've seen a lot in 20 years, and I'm sure I'll see more, but here I am still doing my thing. So.
Indeed. And yeah, it's almost like it was yesterday when we talked 3 years ago about Corona Marketing. But so yes, crazy. Brian, I hope to meet you in person as well at CEX. And well, you know, thank you once again, Joe. We'll keep in touch.
Sounds good. Thanks for all your support, Neil. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Take care. All righty. That was an amazing interview. It validated a lot of what I thought, but we were able just to tap into the genius that is Joe Polizzi for a long period of time. And I hope you got as much value out of it that I personally did. I also thank you. That introduction before I got to the interview was a little bit on the long side, but there is a lot going on that I'm genuinely excited about that I think can help you in many ways. And therefore, I took a little bit longer there. But anyway, hey, this wraps up another episode. Once again, hope to see you on that webinar, April 19th, neilschafer.com/tailwindAI. Get a seat while they are still available. They are going pretty fast. I ain't lying. But anyway, regardless, thanks again for tuning in, for all of your subscriptions, all of your reviews, all of your shout outs on social media. You mean a lot to me. We'll talk to you again next week. Until then, this is your digital marketing coach, Neil Schafer, signing out.
You've been listening to Your Digital Marketing Coach. Questions, comments, requests, links? Go to podcast.neilschafer.com. Get the show notes to this and 200 plus podcast episodes and neilschafer.com to tap into the 400 plus blog posts that Neil has published to support your business. While you're there, check out Neil's Digital First Group Coaching Membership Community if you or your business needs a little helping hand. See you next time on Your Digital Marketing Coach.